Good afternoon. Okay, weekly, approximately weekly, I try and get the yeshiva together for what we call the shicha, the weekly shicha, and basically it's my state of the yeshiva address, my weekly state of yeshiva address. I talk about whatever's on my mind, whatever I want to share with you, whatever I want you to hear, what's bothering me. You know, it's my therapy session, my weekly therapy session, and so I thank you for being my therapist. And I want to, today's title, some people didn't know what my title was and what it means, paradigm shift. So over the course of the sicha, I will try and fill you in. Good? Okay. Okay, the Gemara in Masechet Sfachim Davar tells us that there's a mitzvah 30 days before Chag HaPesach to study the halachos of Pesach. Sholim b'dorshim b'hilcha, shloshim yom karma chag b'hilchos ha-pesach. There are a lot of halachas you have to learn, and therefore 30 days in advance you have to learn the halachas. The Mishnah Berurah, in the beginning of Hilchos Pesach, says that that just doesn't just apply to Pesach, but it applies to all of the regalim. You have to study the laws of Sukkot and Shavuot 30 days before, so you're ready for the chag. And there's a Gemara Masechet Megillah upon the base that says a similar idea, is that Moshe Rabbeinu was mitaken that you're supposed to study the halachos of the chag b'chag. And there should be a drasha about the laws of the chag and the chag, and that applies, Moshe was mitaken to the Moadim, Pesach, Shavuot, and so. The Maharsha asks the following question. There in Megillah Daf Lamed Beis, why only the regalim? What about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Why is there no mention or takana to study or be doresh the laws of Rosh Hashanah on Rosh Hashanah and the laws of Yom Kippur on Yom Kippur? And the Maharsha says a very fascinating answer. Anybody want to suggest an answer? Yes! So study tshuva. Let that be the halacha that you study.
You should do
tshuva. You should do sofer and study sofer. Eat matzah and study the halacha of matzah. Why? So Asi, I just twisted a little bit. But you know what the Maharsha says? Yeah, Alex, what are you saying? Nothing? Yeah.
The Maharsha says
as follows. You know why you don't have to study the halachos of Rosh Hashanah Kippur and Rosh Hashanah Kippur? Because what is the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah Kippur? The mitzvah is tshuva. But guess what? That mitzvah applies how many days a year? That applies every single day, 365 days a year. Therefore, you don't have to go and uniquely study the halachos on Rosh Hashanah Kippur because it's a perpetual mitzvah, and therefore there's no reason to study specifically on the chag itself. That's the essence of the chag, but you don't have to study because it's a every day of the year mitzvah. However, I think we would all agree that when we really think about it, we sense intuitively that there's something different about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Teshuva, even these last 10 days, at the end of the year of Elul, there's something different about the mitzvah of Teshuva in this part of our calendar than you find the rest of the year. And although there might be a mitzvah of Teshuva every single day, I would suggest to you there's a fundamental difference between Teshuva in this part of the calendar that you find all year long, and that is what I'd like to briefly explore with you. And the suggestion I would like to make is that when it comes to Teshuva all year long, I did an Aveira. For that Aveira, I do Teshuva. I have a Mida that's a bad Mida. I'm an angry person. I have a temper. I am miserly. I don't give tzedakah. So I do tshuva on that problem and that issue and that problem. And what I suggest to you is an outside-in approach to tshuva. I have this delinquency, this area I have weakness in, this bad midah, I'm fixing prat by prat by prat. When it comes to these days, I would suggest it's an inside-out approach. It's not looking at the outside details, but perhaps it is going to the core and examining my value system, examining who I am, what I'm all about, from the inside, and reorienting myself to perhaps a different approach, a different relationship, perhaps with Hashem, and thereby, all of a sudden, I don't have to necessarily work on tzedakah, or on kavana in davening, or on making brachos, because once I reoriented my entire relationship with Hashem from the inside out, then all of a sudden, all those details start to fall into place. It is an inside-out rather than an outside-in approach. If I can give you a muscle that is mentioned and developed by the Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, Rav Nevinson, who suggests the following. When you want to go ahead, you have someone who wants to rebuild his house. So he needs to knock down his old house in order to rebuild the new house. Now, how do you go ahead and knock down the existing structure? There are two ways you can go ahead and do so. One is you can climb to the top floor and take a hammer and start to smash away brick by brick by brick and go ahead and knock down your house. That's one approach. The other approach is to go to the foundation, take a giant sledgehammer, and hammer away at the foundation. And by knocking out the bricks of the foundation, then all of a sudden the whole thing topples down. Says Rav Nevinson, the tshuva of all year round is brick by brick by brick. The tshuva of these days is when you go to the core, when you go to the foundation and you reorient. And by reorienting and focusing on how my system of values, how I am supposed to relate to Hashem, to my fellow man, to Torah, all of a sudden, the entire edifice starts to weaken and one can rebuild in a unique and different way. On the one hand, it's so much more difficult to go and opt for reorientation because it requires a whole new vista, a whole new vision. On the other hand, it's also easier because instead of working on 613 issues, you work at an orientation and all of a sudden, again, very different. In the words of Henry David Thoreau, he puts it as follows. For every 1,000 that are hacking at the leaves of evil, there is one hacking at the roots. To go ahead and look at the roots as opposed to the leaves is the idea. And this is a concept, what I would suggest to you, of a paradigm shift. A shift in paradigm. Does anyone know, aside from my afternoon shiur, what the word paradigm means? Yes!
A way of thinking.
A way of thinking. Good. A Greek word, frame of reference, a model. And we all live our lives with a certain type of paradigm. And the avoda of these 10 days before Rosh Hashanah is to go ahead and rethink our paradigm. Rethink what exactly is my relationship. Go ahead and develop a different approach. And one of my favorite authors that I like to read, and Daniel Bannerman, you want to look. So I'm a big fan of a person named Stephen Covey. Has anyone ever heard of Stephen Covey? What did he write?
He wrote...
Correct. The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He wrote a book called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and then he dealt with an eighth habit, and a whole slew. He died, actually, about 3-4 weeks ago. So it's about as slow as him right now. He was in a bicycle accident, and he just recently passed away. Not a Jew, but his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, in my opinion, for me, was the best, like, Musa Sefer that I have read. And he develops, again, the paradigm shift. He gives the following muscle. Imagine, you're in Chicago, and you need to get to a certain destination. You need to get to, give me a street in Chicago. What? Two things. You want to get to McCormick. McCormick in Chicago. You pull out your map, and you find out that you're on Main Street in Chicago, you need to get to McCormick that requires you to go. As you follow the map, a mile this way, make a right, make a left, and you should be out McCormick. You try it out, you do it, and guess what? You expect McCormick, and what do you see? It's not McCormick. You say, whoa, I messed up. Let me start again, and I'm going to focus and try harder. Maybe I wasn't concentrating. I'm going to really, really concentrate and do this the right way. Does it again, follows real concentration, real focusing on to do it the right way, and guess what? No McCormick. One more time. Maybe my attitude. I had a bad attitude. I'm going to go in with a real positive attitude, try one last time and pull it off, and guess what? Doesn't reach its destination. Can't figure out what until he looks at the top of the map. And you know what it says on the top of the map? It doesn't say map of city of Chicago. It actually says map of the city of Detroit. He's never going to reach his destination if he's using the wrong map. Your paradigm is your map. And a person's success in his Avodas Hashem, in his development, in his growth, in his Yiddishkeit, requires him to be handling the right map. If he's using a different map, if he's using a map of Chicago, he could try so hard. Have a great attitude. Really put a lot in, but he's got the wrong map, the wrong paradigm, the wrong model, the wrong frame of reference. He'll never reach his destination. And the challenge is to investigate, identify, are we indeed working with the right paradigms, working with the right maps? Because if you look at yourself and ask yourself that question, what is the map that is driving my decisions? What is the map that is propelling me, pushing me to do the things that I do? Ask yourself, is your map the correct map? If it is, great, you'll hit your destination. But if your map is not the right map, is not, if you will, the Torah map, then as much as you try, and as much as you have a positive attitude, you might not hit the right destination. When you get your right map, that represents a paradigm shift. And all of a sudden, snap, you'll be at McCormick. Paradigm shift changed the world. The greatest invention, the greatest technological revolutions happened through paradigm shift. Used to be that the world, mankind thought Earth was at the center of the universe. Came along a fellow named Copernicus and changed paradigm. People didn't like him for it. But once they accepted that his approach was the MS, changed paradigms, breakthroughs happened. Radical breakthroughs in science, in technology. The world used to think Newtonian physics was the end-all and be-all. Until Einstein came along and made some adjustments. And all of a sudden opened up new vistas, new paradigms created, tremendous, tremendous breakthroughs. That's the power of a paradigm, and that's the power of a paradigm shift. And indeed, it could happen. You ever had some of those aha moments? Like you had one way, and boom, something clicked, and all of a sudden, everything changed. I remember when I had such a time, I always struggled with learning. It was very hard for me. I didn't enjoy it. It was tough. And then there was one day where, boom, something changed, something clicked. And then all of a sudden, it became much, much easier, much, much more manageable. Stephen Covey tells the following story of one of those moments, and you'll see the power of a shift in paradigm. He says he was on a subway once. Now, anyone New Yorkers, been on subways? Do they have subways in other cities? Chicago? Subways? You got subways? Is it like New York? Like New York? New York subway, that's what I'm familiar with. New York subway. If you go to the New York subways on rush hour in the morning, it is not a fun experience. You're literally like, your face is pressed against the door. It's very, very crowded. It's very tense. It's not a comfortable experience. If you ever go on a subway on a Sunday morning, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, you know what? It's pretty chill. It's relaxed. There are a couple of people on the train, quiet. You could read. You could listen to music. There's a much more space. You can get a seat. It's a very, very different experience. So he tells the story. He was on a subway. Stephen Covey was on a Sunday. About 10 people on the train. And everyone, one guy's reading his paper. One guy's reading a book. Listen to music, relaxing, very calm atmosphere. Comes along, a man gets on the train with his four kids. The man sits down, and the four kids start to run wild on the subway train. Back and forth, bumping into the guy with the newspaper, into the guy with reading a book, knocking into him, and all of a sudden, this placid experience on the subway train is no longer so placid. And what's the father doing through all this? He's sitting down, not saying a word to his kids. And the people are getting annoyed on the train. What's going on? What's this father not doing anything about this situation? So finally, Stephen Covey says, I gotta stop it. It's not right. Goes over to the father and says, excuse me, sir, but do you realize your kids are running wild, bothering people? Maybe you can get them under control. And the father kind of is in a daze and kind of wakes out of his daze and says, oh, I'm so sorry. We just left the hospital. Their mother just passed away. I was distracted. I'm really, really sorry. All of a sudden, in that moment, the change. All of a sudden, the annoyance, the frustration, who is this guy? How could he be doing this? Shifts and changes to compassion. How can I help you? Is there anything I can do for you? That's a paradox. A change from the inside out, and my whole attitude, everything about it, starts to shift. One last muscle he brings, a very striking muscle. It's a story from a military journal. And there are these battleships that are doing exercises in the ocean. And there's a battleship that sees another ship in the distance. And they're on a collision course. So the captain of the battleship says, signal that other ship and tell him change direction by 20 degrees, we're on a collision course. Signalman signals over, and a message comes back from the other ship, I'm not changing course, you change course. Well, the captain starts getting annoyed. He says, signalman, signal that ship. I am a captain, 5 stars, top Navy rank, change course. I order you to change course. Well, a message comes back from the other ship and says, I am a private, no rank, you change course. Captain really gets annoyed. Says, signalman, signal that ship. I'm a battleship. Guns pointed. You change course. Message comes back. I am a lighthouse. You change course. Sure enough, the battleship changed course. A paradise. Oh, yeah, I'm going to change course. Very, very different. What these days are times to look at your paradigm, your approach to life, your system of values, your relationship with your bonus soul. That's what these days, these last days, we're about to start saying slichos. This is what it's about. And then all of a sudden, things start to reorient themselves. There's an amazing Gemara. We're all familiar with the Gemara because it's a famous niggun. Ma'amikvah mitaras Yisrael. Okay? Tshuva. The Mishnah and Yuma says is analogous to a mikvah. Listen to this Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Avos Hatuma, Terezbov Halacha Yud Zayin. If I were to ask you, when a person's tummy goes into a mikvah, when does he become tar? I'll give you two possibilities. When he's inside the mikvah, submerged in the mikvah, is he then tar? Or when he leaves the mikvah? When does he achieve his tahara? Inside the mikvah, or when he exits the mikvah? What would you say? Yeah! That's what I would say, David. Thank you. Why would you say that, David? Of course, because he's in the mikvah. What gives him the tahara? The water of the mikvah. So when he's in the water of the mikvah, that's when he achieves the tahara. You know what the Rambam says, though? Not true. When he leaves the mikvah, when he's old in our mikvah, that brings Jesus power. Very, very striking. Why should that be? In fact, it's a nasli halacha. Let's say he's in the mikvah. He went in tummy. He's in the mikvah. And someone inside the mikvah gives him objects that are absolutely tahor, taharos. And he touches them inside the mikvah. You know what the Rambam says about those taharos? Right now, inside the mikvah, you know what they are? They are tummy. When do they become tahor? When they leave the mikvah. When does he become tahor? When he leaves the mikvah. Why is he not tahor inside the mikvah? You know what the answer is? I'm not sure what the answer is halachically, but I'll tell you haskafically. The same Mishmuel, the Sukkot of a Rebbe, had the following idea. What's the magic of a mikvah? The magic of a mikvah is when you go inside the mikvah. Can a human being live inside a mikvah? Is it a place where a human can live? When you're totally submerged, totally underwater, is that a place where a human can live? The answer is obviously not. So when he's in the mikvah, on some level he is, he's kames. He has no chiyus inside the mikvah. It is only when he emerges that he can exist, that he can live. That's when he has his chiyus. So going into the mikvah in a certain sense is enabling you to be reborn as a bria chadasha, as someone new. That's the power. You were tamei, now you emerge tahor. You couldn't exist. You're ki'ilu like your mace, and then you come out in a tahor fashion. The Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Kuf Ayin Gimel says the same idea, a little different. How was the world pre-creation? What did it look like, pre-creation? What? True, what else? Describe it tov avo. Choseh HaPnei Tom, describe it further. What existed? What matter existed? Not nothing. He's correct. Yeruach Elokim merachefes al pnei ha-hamayim. There was this primordial water. It was water. The whole, everything was under water. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, when you go into the mikvah, you know what you're really doing? You're putting yourself into this, if you will, pre-creation state, underwater. When you emerge out of the mikvah, then it's like a recreation of yourself. That's what it is. That's why it says you shouldn't be told in a kli. You should be told though in a place you don't see the walls. You feel like you're in this unending pit of water. And thus emerging like the world emerged out of this water, recreated as a new individual. That's the mikvah process. And the Mishnah Yuma says, tshuva is the same thing. It's a bria chadasha, change in paradigm, and I emerge as a very, very new person. Not easy to change paradigms. Not easy. But as I say, when you go ahead and make sure you're operating with the right map, then there's no doubt your efforts will allow you and enable you to achieve your destination. But it's critical to have the right map. If you're not using a Torah map, the right map, You could try. How many of you, throughout your high school careers, please feel free to raise your hand, found Talmud Torah a major, major struggle? Wow. That's a lot. That's almost unanimous. It's a lot. You know why that is? A lot of reasons why that is. But I'll posit to you, one reason is, if you're not operating with the right map, it's going to be a struggle. Davening is going to be a struggle. Mitzvot are going to be a struggle if you're not using the right map. When you start to develop the right paradigms, the right map, and all of a sudden, you know what mitzvot are going to be? Not a struggle, but a pleasure. Davening is going to be a pleasure. Learning is going to be a pleasure if you're using the right map. I want to tell you something. Me and every single other Rebbe in the yeshiva is exceptionally excited about the year ahead. You, Shana Aleph, have made a phenomenally good first impression. And we're like exceptionally excited, optimistic, proud of your past accomplishments and excited about the future. You've made a collective phenomenal first impression. Great guys, great start. a great chevra. You know what that means? That also means that the bar is pretty high. If you have great guys, great chevra, of course great rabbeim, but the bar is high. And that means that we got to produce. The expectations are high as well. And I want to give you one application of this idea of a paradigm shift. But I think it's something that we need to think about. Is one of the hardest things in any yeshiva, all yeshivas have this challenge, and certainly we do as well, is guys in the morning. Shacharit is a struggle. It's hard in every yeshiva. I don't care if it's, you name it. Shacharit is tough because teenagers like need sleep, number one. In dormitories and yeshiva environments, they don't get the sleep that they need. That's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And a lot of reasons, good reasons why it's a struggle. Madrichim might not wake us up sufficiently. I might set up my alarm for 7:30 p.m. instead of 7:30 a.m. I might not set my alarm. The dorms are very loud at night. Everything is 100% true. 100% true. And a person can go ahead and approach that challenge and say, you know what? I'm going to work on it from the outside in. I want to get to davening. I want to get there on time. Outside in approach. So number one, I'm going to make sure before I go to sleep my alarm is set well. I'm going to ask my roommate to make sure I'm up. My madrich, I'm going to say, come on, make me up for real. Throw water on me. It's cold in the dorm because I'm an LA guy and too much air conditioning. I can't handle it. So I'm going to deal with that. I'm going to deal with all the outside-in issues. And that's an approach. And it could work. It really, really could work. But it's still going to be a daily challenge. A daily challenge. Every night, I got to go through all those steps to make sure that I can do it. It's a daily challenge on the outside-in approach. But I'm going to suggest an alternative approach, the high-level approach. But imagine for a moment if I thought of myself as a Ben Melech. I'm the son of a king. Hashem is my Tati. I'm the son of the Ribono Shel Olam. And imagine if I thought for a moment and I reflected upon the fact that the most profound relationship that expresses the greatness that I am is my relationship with Hashem. And imagine if my experience in tefillah was a profound experience, and I want that. It's so critical for me to start my day in that fashion. I want that relationship with Ribono Shel Olam because I am a Ben Melech, his son. And who wouldn't want that kesher, that relationship? And if that's how I approach it, all of a sudden, the struggle, the daily struggle, of course I want $1 million, so I jump out of bed and get the $1 million. Ben Melech, the daily struggle all of a sudden starts to become much more automatic. A boy told me this morning, he says, Rebbe, I really, really want to. Really, really want to, but I can't. I just can't. Too late, too cold, too this, whatever. So, I hear the struggle. I'm not denying the struggle. But it's a struggle operating with a certain paradigm. I had a son who was an athletic kid. For some reason, still have a son, still athletic kid. For some reason, he could not hit a baseball. Couldn't do it. Great athlete. Throw a ball, and he just couldn't hit it. And he kept on saying, I can't. And I hate that. I couldn't deal with those words. It's tough. I'm struggling. It's hard. I can't. That's a paradigm. And that's an approach and a paradigm that's defeated. But if a person opens up his vista, expands himself, and sees how great he is, how much he can achieve, how special he is, and how much he can accomplish. So all of a sudden, the lexicon, the terminology of I can't, never even get started. If I see myself as how great I can be, how connected I can be, I'm a Tzelem Elokim, I can have that relationship, then all of a sudden, when it comes to learning, when it comes to davening, when it comes to waking up, everything, it's not, I can't. But it's, I'm going to get there 5 minutes, 10 minutes early. That's all of a sudden the shift in paradigm, and all of a sudden a lot of those struggles become much, much easier. I want to close with one last idea. Listen to this idea. It's very special and very meaningful. We read the Tocha this week, brachos and klolos. And the brachos are introduced with the following pasuk: Ubo alecha kol ha-brachos ha'il. You can get all of these brachos. V'hisigucha. What does the word hisigucha mean? Anybody? The Varno, can you help me out? Catch up to you. Isaac, what are you trying to? They'll overtake you. So listen to the pasuk. All these brachos will come upon you. V'hisigucha. And they will, what's the lesson? What was the translation? Overtake. What did the Varno say? Catch up to you. Does that seem superfluous? Why does it say you'll get all the brachos? What does it mean, v'hisigucha? And they will overtake you. Unklus writes, what v'hisigucha mean? V'yidbekenucha. What is it? How does he translate the word v'hisigucha? They will attach. I don't understand. If I'm getting the brachos, aren't they attaching to me? If I'm getting the brachos, aren't they attaching? The answer is not necessarily. Hashem can give you tremendous amounts of bracha. He can bestow on you bracha upon bracha upon bracha. But what do you need, gentlemen? You need a good catch. It's not enough just to receive the bracha, because if you're Teflon, he gives you the bracha, they can slide right off. You have a good catch, the hisigucha, they will attach to you. They will cling to you, they will be with you. You know, 90% of lottery winners, 5-10 years after they win the lottery, you know what their financial state is? Bankruptcy. Bankruptcy. Hashem gave them brachos. They won a lottery. $50 million. 90% go bankrupt. They got the bracha, but they didn't enable it to stick. It's not enough just to receive brachos. You have to enable them to stick, to attach to it. On both sides, as we close our first schmooze of the year, it seems to me, as I look around this room, we all should view ourselves as the recipients, whether it's from our parents, our high school, your rabbein today in this yeshiva. This year represents to you a year of tremendous bracha. Tremendous bracha. It's there, bestowed upon you. You have one mission, and that mission is to make sure that bracha sticks. To make sure you have your catcher's mask, because your rabbeim are going to pour so much into you. So much Torah, so much love, and so much care. You got to catch it. You got to make it stick. Your chavrusim, in the Beis Medrash, in Shir, there's so much bracha. Being in Eretz Yisrael, what a bracha. Looking out the window, Yishalayim here, HaKodesh, right here. What a bracha. Your chance is to make sure it sticks. And I wish everyone the bracha, that Be'ez Hashem, by they doing their job, by us doing our job, and with the Siyat Mishmaya, that Be'ez Hashem will have, will get these brachos, will make them stick, and Be'ez Hashem lead us towards a real sense of Shana Tova Umesuka, Slicho, Motze Shabbos. Everyone back here, 12:25, and I want to wish everyone a good Shabbos. Thank you.